From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling interviews Dr. Felix Tavis from DIRECT Corporation on novel drug delivery strategies. Dr. Felix Tavis is Chairman, Co-Founder, and Chief Scientific Officer of DIRECT Corporation. Previously, Dr. Tavis worked for ALZA, holding positions directing research, technology development, and product development for a variety of controlled drug delivery systems. He received his undergraduate and graduate education in physics at the University of Louvain in Belgium. Dr. Tavis, would you briefly describe the most popular forms of drug delivery and the advantages and disadvantages of each?
In the main, you'll find the oral dosage forms, transdermal dosage forms, and injectable depots as the most popular forms. So the oral forms, they are obviously attractive because they can take large amounts of drug. If you look at the pharmacopoeia, some drugs need to be taken as much as 1 gram a day or several grams a day, but an oral dosage form can potentially contain up to 1 gram a day. The advantage is that you have close control over the dosing, since maximum it will be a once-a-day product, potentially twice a day. That puts the patient somewhat in control of the administration. The disadvantage is that it's only up to once a day, and so that, you know, longer durations cannot be done. And compliance is an issue because if the patient skips the doses, you don't get the benefit. And you cannot really deliver macromolecules like peptides and proteins. So while peptides and proteins are the type of drugs coming out of the biotech industry and more important, you know, oral dosage forms are not really equipped to do that. Some dosage forms are also tamper-prone because they contain a whole day's medication, and if you have an opioid or a stimulant in there, then some of those can be broken and liberate the drug and get into the abuse problem. So at DIRECT, we are focusing with the Oradur technology to basically eliminate that problem or mitigate that significantly by making dosage forms abuse resistant. Now, the transdermal dosage forms are very attractive because they can take you beyond days to several days or up to 1 week. Again, the patient has control over the product as it can be removed. And the other advantage is that transdermal drugs do not go through the GI tract where drugs could be metabolized, as they also don't go through the liver. And so you bypass essentially the first pass through the GI tract and the liver. And therefore, sometimes one needs only smaller amounts of drug to be effective. So that makes drugs which need to be taken with larger doses now potentially possible for transdermals. Because the disadvantage of transdermal products is that you can only get so much through the skin. The skin was really made to keep stuff out of the body, obviously. And maximum 1 to 4 milligrams per day is what you can expect, and typically more on the lower end of that. And certainly one cannot deliver proteins and peptides through the skin. That's still part of research. Then when you go to injectable depots, literally any type of molecule can be delivered via a needle or an insert. And so that makes proteins and peptides possible via that route. These dosage forms can also be made to last for days, weeks, or months. And that's very important with situations where compliance is an issue, such as CNS products, for example, Alzheimer's and whatnot. Those dosage forms are very important for that area. A disadvantage is that, you know, once you have that implant or that injection under the skin, not easily removed. Some of them can be removed if they're not bioerodible or if they have not eroded to a substantial degree. The doses are limited because you can park only so much medication under the skin, typically, again, in the 1 to 4 milligrams per day range. And some of them have rather low drug loadings, so you need to inject sometimes quite a bit of volume, which is painful. And some of them have a high burst initial drug loading. So direct, we are focusing on those two shortcomings by making products which cut off that burst and also have about 10 times the volume loadings of microparticulate dosage forms with our Saber technology. So that's an area of opportunity at direct.
Now, what are some drug delivery strategies that are not widely used now but which show promise for the future?
There are several of those technologies that are in the pipeline. One of them is the electrotransport technology, where you drive drugs through the skin by iontophoresis or electrodiffusion, electroosmosis. It's one technology I started at ALSA in 1987 to deliver fentanyl, and that product has just been approved. It's called Ionsys, and it's going to be marketed by J&J. So that's an area that I think we'll see more drugs in the future. Another nascent technology from ALSA is Microflux. Actually, the company was spun out of ALSA, using microneedles to pierce the skin and to deliver macromolecules and also potentially large amounts of drug through the skin. Then, of course, Nektar has the inhaled dosage form for insulin, which has just come to the market. That's a delivery of macromolecules via the lung. Maybe we may see more of that. At Direct, we have two technologies not yet on the market, but very exciting. One is the Oradur technology, which makes long-acting dosage form, oral dosage forms, abuse-resistant. And Remoxy is the first product which have King Pharmaceutical as a marketing partner, and that product is in phase 3. And then the Saber Depot technology, which is a depot that can have high drug loadings, low burst, very nice delivery for months at a time for small molecules as well as macromolecules. And our first product in phase 2 is Positor for it's a delivery of bupivacaine for post-op pain.
Now, delivering protein and peptide drugs in an oral form has been kind of a quest for the holy grail for many drug delivery companies. What is the current status of oral delivery platforms for protein and peptide drugs? And in lieu of oral delivery, what are some other ways to deliver these types of therapeutics?
Well, you're right. I mean, the biotech industry has been very productive, even though, according to the 2005 figures by Ernst & Young, pharma outspends biotech 3-1. The biotech new medical entity approvals has been 2-1 to the pharma industry. So there are a lot of biotech compounds in the pipeline and in development. And obviously, delivering them via the oral route would be very attractive, except that the GI tract has been made to digest drugs such as peptides and proteins, and they will be degraded. So drug absorption via the GI tract has been very difficult. There have been companies attempting to do that for some time. Hemisphere is such a company. But there is basically really no compound on the market in these technologies. So at Direct, we've basically taken the view that the holy grail or oral drug delivery of peptides and proteins is way off. And we are going to take the sure shot, which is depot injections that are elegant, small in size, high in drug volume loading, easy to manufacture, and that can deliver these proteins and peptides for weeks and months at a time.
Now, at a recent Arrowhead conference, there was a session entitled, "Should All Drug Delivery Companies Evolve into Specialty Pharma Companies?" Could you define a specialty pharmaceutical company, delineate the challenges for this type of firm, and then answer the question, should all drug delivery companies evolve into specialty pharmaceutical companies?
A specialty pharma company can be defined as a company focused on a certain niche market, which is a special class of treatment where, you know, the big pharmas are not, pharmaceutical companies are not looking. Certain areas such as pain management or urology, those are typically some of those categories. Now, drug delivery has been a cradle for specialty pharma companies, and ALSA was a very good example of that. But I think it's not necessary that all drug delivery companies should turn into specialty pharma companies. It will depend on the management, and it will depend on the financial whereabouts that the company has, whether or not to get there. Drug delivery business has been viable, but obviously it needs to be based on a strong patent position as a prerequisite in order to license, of course. So, ALSA pioneered the idea of the no-risk model, essentially. And so drug delivery has often been associated with a business model, which is licensing technology at an early stage, whereby the partner pays for everything, and then one gets a modest royalty if you have a good intellectual property position. Typically, royalties on the order of 5 to 10%. But at Direct, we've taken the position that, while that's a good business, we want to take products further down to phase one, phase two, to get double-digit royalties, upfront monies, and also milestones. And the Posidur, as one of our first products in the Sabre technology, Sabre Depot, as an example, we licensed that to Nycomed for pretty much the rest of the world, while we maintained U.S. and Canadian rights, and got $202 million in milestones and upfronts, 15 to 40% royalty, manufacturing markup, and a copay, 50% for all R&D activities worldwide by Nycomed. So these deals are obviously far better. Now, the aim that we have at Direct is to become a specialty pharma company, and which means that obviously after the gross margin and sales costs, you can potentially keep 60% of sales. So the strategy of Direct is basically then using the drug delivery technology as a business stepping stone to become a partner for licensing, but typically late stage, and then also build the specialty pharma company. And we're looking at hospital products, typically to start with hospital products, which can be managed by a sales force of 100 to 150 people, with Posidur as our flagship.
Now, my final question is, how promising is nanotechnology as a drug delivery vehicle, and where does this approach stand in terms of its development as a viable drug delivery technique?
No, nanotechnology signifies things which are smaller than 1 micrometer, so 10 minus 9 meter, essentially. Typically, in the 100 to 200 nanometer range is what one calls nanotechnology. So it is making particles of that size, or it is making polymeric compositions with drugs of that size. And the question then is, how would we see that impacting drug delivery? It has been shown that drugs which otherwise are not absorbed or very poorly absorbed, when they're reduced down to sizes in particle size of smaller than 100 nanometers, that these drugs can be absorbed via the GI tract. The technology, I think, is still in its early stage, but I think it will be an important part of the drug delivery armamentarium in general.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. Now we'd like your thoughts on some of the topics discussed during this week's podcast. Please go to www.genengnews.com/blog and answer the following question. What kinds of scientific and technical advances are required to eventually allow the oral delivery of protein and peptide drugs? Bye for now. To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.
How would we see that impacting drug delivery? It has been shown that drugs which otherwise are not absorbed or very poorly absorbed, when they're reduced down to sizes in particle size of smaller than 100 nanometers, that these drugs can be absorbed via the GI tract. The technology, I think, is still in its early stage, but I think it will be an important part of the drug delivery armamentarium in general.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. Now we'd like your thoughts on some of the topics discussed during this week's podcast. Please go to www.genengnews.com/blog and answer the following question. What kinds of scientific and technical advances are required to eventually allow the oral delivery of protein and peptide drugs? Bye for now. To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.